The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Okie dokie, folks, welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing, and we're going to be talking about gardening for the next hour. So I hope you want to, because that's what I'm here for. And matter of fact, I'm not even here for talk about gardening. I'm here to talk with you about gardening. So, you know, give us a call. And it doesn't matter to me if you want to do horticulture or, you know, real left brain rules and all that kind of stuff. I can do that. I'm a horticulturist. Or if you just want to talk about, you know, how to keep your neighbor's dogs from using your yard is a bad, whatever. Let's talk about it. If you want to talk about anything related to gardening at all, give us a call. It's toll free, 1-877-MPB-RING. I can't remember the number, so I just give that out. MPB stands for Mississippi Public Broadcasting, and RING is what Kevin Farrell is hoping that you do, so we can put him to work instead of watching the sports stuff on his phone in there. Anyway, hey, Java, what a great morning. What a great morning. Did you end up taking your kids to the fair? We talked about that last week.
Yeah, we got a chance to go to the fair, and, you know, we didn't stay as long as I wanted to stay because I'm a big kid, but everybody got a chance to ride, got some good pictures and videos sent to the grandparents, and everybody ate their favorite fair food.
Okay, what was the worst of their favorite? And that includes you too.
What do you mean the worst?
Yeah, what was the worst? You know, because everybody, you know, I've got some food at the fair that sounded like a good idea, but it turned out to be, no, I don't think so. I think it was like deep fried Snickers bars. So I said, no, I can't do this.
No,
it's crazy.
We did. We got the deep fried Snickers. I had never tried it. My wife had it before, and it was actually good. I mean, I got my traditional funnel cake.
Oh, yeah.
That was, you know, what I kind of wanted. So, I mean, well, it wasn't, I don't know, bad fair food.
Well, what about the corn? Did y'all try the corn?
No, we didn't get the corn, and like I said, we didn't get a chance to stay as long as I wanted to, but, you know.
Well, especially after eating stuff like that, the kids were bouncing off the fairway, no question about that.
100%.
Yeah. And the reason I want to mention that, because I got an email the other day. Let me see if I can find who it was. Oh, Bill Prescia. He wanted to know when corn is ready to pick. And that's what I was thinking of the state fair. When is corn ready to pick when you're growing it yourself? And this is one of those stupid things that I know that I wish I didn't know, except for times like this. When you plant corn and it grows the leaves and it grows the little corn in, when those little silk things start to stick out the end of the ear of corn, you got 21 days before you can pick the corn. I know it sounds crazy, but those are the little female flowers that get the pollen from the tassels, and it takes about 3 weeks from when they first show to when it's time to pick the corn. I know that's kind of weird, but there it is. Anyway, unfortunately, a lot of people plant all the corn at one time. It means you got to pick it all at one time. It means you got to eat it all at one time if you want to be nice and sweet. Anyway, I've got some other emails. I got some really interesting emails I want to share with y'all, and some events that are coming up next week. Two of which I'm going to go to myself. I think they're going to be a whole lot of fun, and we're going to talk about those and some cheesy music and a few other odds and ends. But let's do what we do best, and let's start out by talking to people about gardening. We're going to talk with Jim in Jackson. Hey, Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Felder. Jim Rosenblatt here.
Howdy.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's up, Dean?
Well, I was cutting the dead flowers off our hydrangeas last week, and I got to thinking, aside from improving the appearance, does it help the plant at all to deadhead the blossoms like that? Does the plant know or benefit from deadheading? Is it kind of like me cutting my toenails?
Well, in some plants, it does make a difference. In things like shrubs and all, it's not that big a deal, Jim, because, you know, those flower heads you cut off are really the dried flower bracts. The flowers are long gone. So it really doesn't matter on shrubs and stuff unless you actually prune back to the stems. But on things like annuals, like zinnias, okra, things like that. If you remove the spent flowers, keep them from going to fruit, that frustrates them and annuals will start blooming again. So deadheading helps annuals and some perennials flower more quickly, but not that big a deal on the shrubs.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, let me ask you something. You're the dean emeritus, I guess, of Mississippi College School of Law. Do y'all have a colors? Does MC have colors for their team, or is that a campus thing you don't worry about?
The colors are blue and gold.
Blue and gold. All righty. Just want to double check because we're going to be talking about that in a little while. Anyway, hands back on the wheel, Jim. Thanks for your call, man. Righty, deadheading. That just means removing spent flowers, and that does help some plants continue. You know, if you don't pick your okra and you let it get big and go to seed, it's going to stop producing. But as soon as you cut that okra off, plant says, hang on, there's something not going on here, right? They start making more flowers, make more seeds. Let's stay in Jackson. Let's go to Kelly. Hey, Kelly, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Felder. I would just want to say I'm a proud MC Law alumnus and always a pleasure to hear Dean Rosenblatt when he calls into your show.
Yeah, that's a way to suck up.
Listen, I need to plant some trees in my yard. I have some sweet gums that have died. They've been cut back, and yeah. I have big holes where the stumps were, and I'm thinking possibly crepe myrtles would be a good choice. And I wondered when is the best time to plant those, and where is a good place to get good stock?
Okay, a couple of three things first, Kelly. Did you have the stumps ground?
Yes, they've been ground and they've been gone for a while. In fact, you know, I just kind of have holes left there where they were. The tree has rotted out.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. Those trees also had great big roots. Some are as big around as your legs. And as those roots decompose, they're going to leave root-shaped holes in the ground. So it's going to cave in long streaks here and there. So I wouldn't plant right on those because there's nothing but, you know, I would plant to the side of the old stumps is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Second of all, you can plant a tree that's grown in a container anytime you can dig a good hole. And a good hole means a wide hole, not deep, but wide. You know, if you don't feel a little stupid about it, if it's not at least 3 feet or so wide, it's not big enough because we're trying to get those new trees to grow roots straight out. And so if you don't dig a wide hole, at least loosen the dirt a shovel's depth, you know, 2 or 3 feet out from the hole. That'll help them grow quickly. And when you get your plants, be sure to loosen up the potting soil and the roots just a little bit to get them started in your dirt. That's really important. Don't just pull it out of the pot, stick it in the ground. If you do that, you can plant anytime you get around to it. So, I would think about just digging some holes and then getting tree. Let me back up. I'm not recommending crepe myrtles right now. I just planted a whole bunch. It's the state, it's the official tree of Jackson. It's the most popular flowering tree in the South. But we've got a real serious problem with the new insect pests that there's realistically not a control for crepe myrtles. Down the road, I don't think they're going to be the best choice. So let me recommend some other kind of plants instead. If you want a small flowering tree, for example, there's one called Vitex that's got spikes of real pretty purple or blue flowers. There's small flowering trees like our native parsley hawthorn. There's light. There's a sort of airy evergreen native yopon holly. There's a bunch of things besides crepe myrtles right now. I think over the next few years, crepe myrtles is going to leave a bad taste in people's mouth. I hate to say that because I got them in my own yard. But
okay.
If you shoot me an email, Kelly, I've got a little short list. I work with a guy named Bob Bruzak up at the Mississippi State Landscape Architecture School. We've come up with a pretty nice little list of alternatives to crepe myrtles.
Okay. Where do you recommend getting the trees to plant? Are the box stores a good source or local stores or order them, or what do you recommend?
Oh, I always recommend shopping local. I would rather get something from a locally owned place, you know, but the box stores have really good deals. There's also some wholesale places, but, you know, anyway, decide what kind of tree you want, then just do a little shopping around for it and get the best one at the best price. And that changes from month to month at every store. So let's find out what you want first, and then shoot me an email. I'll give you a few hints.
Okay. We appreciate the help. Thank you.
You bet, Kelly. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Hattiesburg. Thomas, what's up?
Oh, not much. I got a two-part question. I did a solarization project last about July, I guess, because the wheat, it rained so much, and it just took over my garden and ruined my garden. So I trimmed it, weed-eated it. I put a 3 mil plastic, I water sealed it, and I guess so much rain, it just grew, the grass just kept growing.
Oh, yeah.
And so I didn't know if I failed on that or what, but my question on that is can I just, I had heard something other, you could just go ahead and leave that project through the winter. And maybe that would help. I don't know.
Yeah, this is clear plastic, right? Was it clear plastic you used?
Yes, number
okay.
3 mil.
Yeah, okay. A couple of things. First of all, the solarization, the way it works is it's just like if you leave the windows up on your car, your pickup truck, on a hot day, it traps the heat in there. And so it only really works when it's really, really hot and moist, because what happens, the sun goes through the plastic, it heats up the moisture in the soil, turns it into steam, and the plastic traps that steam. So it really only works on fairly smallish plants when it's really hot and the ground is kind of moist.
Yeah.
There's some plants that just love it. There's some that just love
okay,
it.
Okay, well, let me ask you another question. I'm fixing to get a pine tree stump ground.
Uh-huh.
Can you put those grindings in your garden?
I wouldn't work them directly into the dirt at first. I would use them on top of the ground as a mulch to let them go through a season of kind of decomposing a little bit. Because fresh bark, when it breaks down in the soil, it takes nitrogen away from your plant. So I would use it on the top as a mulch. And then next time you plant, then work it in.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. So just would you leave the plastic on the garden part?
No. What I would do is I'd go out there and till it up, and I'd plant some stuff and just, you know, till it. And, you know, and then if you wanted to give it a try again next spring, next June or July is when solarization is going to work best. But that's when your garden's, you know, really kicking. So, and by the way, solarization will kill a lot of weeds. It'll kill a lot of weed seeds, but usually doesn't get them all. So I'm not sure that it's going to be your best approach in the long run, unless you do it in the middle of the summer when your garden's kicking. So anyway, good luck on it. Good luck on it. Ooh, we got a whole bunch of calls lined up. We can go down to Diamond Head. Hey, Andrew, what's going on near the Gulf Coast?
Hey, Felder. Well, we're probably not as cooling down as fast as everybody else is, but we are cooling down, and the grass is slowing down, and I've been cutting all year on the highest setting.
Yeah.
But where I've always struggled to grow some grass, I'm starting to see, just in the normal bad spots, I'm starting to see the weeds go ahead and start catching back up to me, because
yeah.
The grass is kind of dying back. And I was wondering, is it too late to spray, and B, this is St. Augustine. Would in my bare spots or in other spots, would throwing ryegrass down for the winter hurt anything?
Well, the ryegrass won't hurt. If the way ryegrass hurts St. Augustine centipede is it grows over the wintertime. It needs to be fertilized, you know, in the fall and in the winter, and that fertilizer causes damage to your summer lawn. But also in the spring, if you don't mow it regularly, it'll shade out that first flush of new growth of your St. Augustine. You know, when St. Augustine sort of jump starts itself with that first flush of growth, usually in March or so, and if that gets shaded out, it starts the grass off on a weak foot. So I wouldn't overseed St. Augustine centipede, but if you want to put some out in the bare areas, that'd be fine. But basically, you're just swapping one weed for another, you know.
I know. I'm just trying to keep it green. But is it too late in this season to spray weed killer down?
Weed killers work on actively growing small weeds. So if you've got weeds that are still growing really, really well and they're not all gone to flower and stuff like that, the weed killers will work okay. But, again, if the weeds are hot, they're dry, they're gone to flower, and they're just not growing that well, weed killers just won't work. A lot of those weeds are going to die down as soon as it gets cold anyway. So what I would think about doing would be to concentrate on winter weeds, and they're not even up yet. Let's wait until January, February to look at your winter weeds. And then let's get your grass nice and thick next spring and think about using the weed killers on your summer weeds next summer. That's what I'd do.
Hey, I always appreciate your advice, Felder.
Nothing to it. Hey, in other words, you get a pass. Go find something fun to do.
All right. Thank you, man.
You bet. See ya. Huh. Let's go to Mobile. Hey, Vicky. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. What's up?
Yeah. I have a yard full of very old growth azaleas, camellias, and gardenias.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to just sort of start over. What is the best way to remove those old plants from my yard and I have to hire someone to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, something that would be cost effective too, short of a flamethrower.
Yeah. Well, the easiest way is have them come with a chainsaw, cut them off flush to the ground, and haul them off. And then, you know, next year those stumps may sprout back out. Some will and some won't. But if they sprout back out, you know, you could just, you know, step on them or cut the new growth, and that'll peter them out. Or else you could have somebody actually take the chainsaw or the axe or something and cut just the stump itself out. You don't have to worry about the side roots or deep roots. But, you know, if you cut them off flush with the ground and get a little bit of that stump out, they're gone for good. Don't have to dig them all the roots up is what I'm saying. But chainsaw and a trailer and some burly guys with, you know, an axe or something, that'll do it.
Fantastic.
And you got plenty of time. Leave a few of them. Come on, Vicky. Leave a few of them because they're pretty. And they're there, you know. I'm just saying. It's your yard.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Love your show.
You bet. Appreciate it. Some unsolicited advice there, Vicky. Appreciate your call. We've gotten calls from all over the state down in Mobile, Alabama already. We've got some things coming up, some events you might be interested in. Love to share them with you when we come back. Also, some emails that are very interesting. But I would like to mention, this past week, I got really, really lost. I mean, I got lost. Coming back from Starkville, I cut over between Macon and Louisville, and I decided to cut down to Philadelphia, and I ended up in Noxapater. It's a neat little town. I got a little purple house there. If you anywhere near Noxapater, you know about the purple house. But boy, oh boy, I got a back road tour of the central part of North Mississippi. I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing here at Mississippi Public Broadcasting. We'll be back with more of your phone calls and stuff right after this.
MPBOnline.org is the destination for everything Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Catch up on past shows from Think Radio, check out MPB TV or Music Radio, and become a sustaining member, all from one place. Get connected now at MPBOnline.org.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing. Before we go to this next call, though, let me throw out something. I was, as I walk in the mornings, I always, you know, steal stuff out of people's yards to talk about. And I grabbed one out of my own yard. I got me some okra, and this is called burgundy okra. It's kind of maroon looking. And I grabbed a flower called Angelonia, which is white. So I've got burgundy or maroon and white. I got flowers and fruit. It made me think of the Land-Grant University where we teach about growing flowers and vegetables and fruits and stuff called Mississippi State University. I got maroon and white, okra, and a flower called Angelonia. But I got this. I found a wild blue azuradum. It's kind of purple. I would call that purple. It's a wild purple azuradum and a golden orange persimmon. That made me think of the other Land-Grant University in Mississippi, Alcorn State. So between Alcorn State and Mississippi State, they're Land-Grant universities. They teach horticulture, and I got flowers and vegetables and fruits to represent their schools. Purple and gold for Alcorn and maroon and white for Mississippi State. And we don't want to get into the fighting okra stuff and the eagles and the land sharks and all that. I'm just talking about growing food and flowers, and that's what Alcorn and Mississippi State teaches how to do. Let's go up to the Delta, the middle of the Delta, and talk with Gene and Leland. Hey, Gene, thank you for holding. What's up?
Hi, Felder. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I really enjoy your show and appreciate your advice.
You bet. What's up?
I have some 40-foot tall pine trees, and the needles are starting to turn brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I called the tree service out. They said that beetles were boring into the bark and were going to kill the tree eventually. And they told me that I needed to take these trees down. And
they'll do it for you for a fee, I bet.
Yes, exactly. So that's kind of where my question's coming
okay.
from. It's going to be expensive to do it,
yeah.
And I need kind of a timeline on what you might think, how quickly I should be taking these trees down.
Okay.
I know it's difficult without seeing
No. Actually, this is not difficult. My son is and his wife have got a house that got a lot of huge pine trees. And the in Jackson, a big mature pine tree, I mean, these are big trees, are going to cost somewhere in the range of $1,500 to $2,000 a piece to take down. So that's it. So I know what I'm saying. No, plus, I taught the tree surgery course. So let's back up a little bit. If you look at your trees, Gene, from down the street, if they've got needles on the ends of most of their branches, you don't have a problem. The older needles, you know, not the ones on the ends, last year's needles are starting to fall now. So you'll see a lot of brown stuff on every branch, but if the ends of the branches are okay on most of the branches, there's not a problem. I'm sure about this. They naturally, pine trees naturally are the self-pruning. As they grow taller, they naturally drop their older lower limbs. So you'll always have a dying limb or two or three on mature pine trees, especially in the Delta with the kind of weather that you've had the past several years. But if overall they've got leaves on the ends of most of the branches, nothing to worry about. Now, that's the first thing. Second of all, you can check for the beetles yourself. When a pine beetle, which is about the size of a grain of rice, goes into a pine tree, a normal healthy tree will push it right back out, and it'll have a little wad of looks like a big chunk of popcorn stuck on the side of the tree.
And that, yes.
Okay. Now, if it's just one or two here and there, it's not a big deal because the tree will actually can repel beetles that way. But if you've got holes, you've got sawdust coming out of it, that means that the beetles are in there and they're girdling the tree. They go around and around up under the bark. When they do that, the tree will die almost overnight. It just seems like, wow, one day they're there, next day they're completely brown. You know, that's the symbol, the symptom that you've got that tree is infested. You only need to worry about taking down the ones that are actually dead.
Okay.
Now,
good.
And get this, unless your trees are right next to your house or you park your car or neighbor, you don't even have to have them cut down. Pine trees don't tend to fall sideways. They tend to fall straight down a big chunk at a time and make a pile of pine stuff at the base.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll fall sideways, but most of the time, you know, you don't. If there's not any danger of them causing problems, leave them out there for the woodpeckers and stuff like that.
Oh, well, there you go.
And don't let them say, well, if you got pine beetles, they're going to spread your other trees. Pine beetles are like cold germs and mosquitoes. They're out there anyway. Keep your trees healthy. That's really the only practical thing you do to help pine trees repel pine beetles. So unless they're stressed, or they've been hit by lightning, or there's severe root problems or something like that, most of the time they'll take care of themselves. I would only worry about the tree that dies completely, and then you got a couple of years to think about taking it down because it's not going to fall before then.
Excellent. I really appreciate this advice.
Okay, now take the money I just saved you and go get some tamales at Doe's over in Greenville.
Sounds like a great plan.
Okay, Jean. Hey, thanks for being part of the program, too.
Thanks, Felder.
All righty. Yeah, that's true. It's true stuff, folks. I'm not making this up. By the way, let me throw out a few things that are going on around the area you might be interested in. First of all, this week in the garden, I didn't do squat. I didn't do anything in my garden. I did nothing. I just enjoyed it. That's my goal all along anyway, to plant stuff that's pretty and fragrant, attracts butterflies that I can eat if I want to, things like that, and that'll kind of take care of themselves. And I've succeeded in that for the most part, so I guess it's working pretty well. I water some potted plants, and I fertilize my cabbage and broccoli, and I pick some okra and herbs for my big pot of cool weather soup, and maybe I'll set out some kale this weekend, but it's just too pretty to not just relax and enjoy a little bit. Upcoming events, this next coming Thursday on October 25th, the oldest plant swap in the universe, the universe's oldest plant swap, continuous, is at the library in Flora, Mississippi, which is between Jackson and Yazoo City. It's Thursday, starts at 9 o'clock. Bring one or two plants that are ready to go. You know, don't just yank something out of the ground. You know, make sure that whoever gets it, it'll live till they get home with it. But bring one or two nice plants. It doesn't matter what kind. And it's going to start at 9, so get there in time for them to register you and do the door prize and all that kind of stuff. So 8:30 is when people start showing up. Flora, Mississippi Library. Now, 2 days after that, on the 27th of October, is the Mobile plant swap down in Mobile. It's at Central Presbyterian Church, the parking lot. It is an unbelievable assortment of people and plants, and I'll be down there for that too. But that's at on Central, and I forget the other street, but Central Press Church in Mobile. They have a really big plant swap and a lot of fun. So I'll be at both of those. Also, I'm going to be in Pontotoc in November, I think the 11th. I can't remember, but it's a meeting for the public talking about gardening. I guarantee it'll be a fun time. So if you got anything I can help promote, shoot me an email about it. It's real easy, garden@mpbonline.org. Today's tune of the week. Now, Java, last week it was World Egg Day, so we did a little chicken thing. And somebody says, no, Felder, we can do better than that. So a listener suggested this tune. And I know last week was World Egg Day, but I'm thinking this is too cheesy to not share with other people. We're going to take a quick break, listen to a cheesy tune, and come back with your phone calls live here at MPB right after this.
A chicken farmer went out on one dark and dusty day, and by the coop he rested as he went along his way, when all at once a rotten egg hit him in the eye. It was the sight he dreaded, ghost chickens in the sky. In the sky. This farmer had these chickens since he was 24, working for the colonel for 30 years or more, raising all those chickens up to send them off to fry. And now they want revenge, ghost chickens in the sky. Sky. Their beaks were black and shiny, their eyes were blazing red. They had no meat or feathers, oh, these chickens all were dead. They picked that farmer up and he died by the claw. They cooked him extra crispy and served him with coleslaw. Buck, buck, buck. In the sky. Bah, 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 bah. Bah, 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 bah. Ghost chickens in the sky.
Excuse me. I'm Felder Rushing. Welcome back. I hope y'all enjoy that cheesy tune. I appreciate somebody bringing that one to my. Thanks a lot for that one. We actually got a call from somebody who said Marty Robbins is rolling over in his grave. Anyway, if you want to give us a call and talk about gardening, give us a call. It's 1-877-MPB-RING. I mentioned there's a plant swap in Flora, Mississippi next Thursday. Starts at 9. The one at the in Mobile, I don't remember what time it starts, but we'll talk about that maybe next week. Next week is going to be a special drive time, by the way. We're going to play some extra cheesy music, and we're going to be, I think, donating, what is it? Is it food for shelters? Not just dogs, but animals.
Yeah, we partnered with some local pet shelters around the state. So for contributions coming to MPB, we're going to turn around and donate food to shelters around the state. So when people contribute to us, we donate to the pet shelters.
Okay, that's going to be next Friday. And I'm going to have some of the cheesy music selections and talking about that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm not sure when the plant swap in Mobile starts. I think it's at 10 o'clock, but anyway, we'll talk about that next week. Let me throw out, before we go to the phone calls, let me throw this out. I do want to thank people who listen by way of podcast, because they're all over there. I got one from Georgia, Jane from Georgia. She said that she's a retired extension professional. She sent me a photo of some really strange little eggs covered with fine white threads she found in her mulch. She was getting a spot ready to plant a new hydrangea and found these little eggs and white threads on them. I want to know what is it and will it harm anything. And she just wanted to – she thinks it's a fungus, a fungi. Anyway – it's one I'm familiar with. It's called a stinkhorn. Now, the fungus is that white, thready-looking stuff, and it breaks down old bark and mulch and stuff. It does not hurt plants at all. It's a natural fungus that helps break down leaves and twigs and mulch and bark and stuff in the wood. Doesn't hurt plants at all. But when it's happy, when it's really ready to celebrate, instead of making a flower, fungi make things like mushrooms and toadstools and push balls and things like that. This particular one makes what's called a stinkhorn. Those white little eggs are going to sprout into something that's bigger than my finger. And I don't know, depending on your taste, it can look pretty nasty. But it's called a stinkhorn, and it smells bad, stinkhorn. You see it in old mulch. When we have cool weather, a little rain, those egg things will sprout this finger-looking thing that smells really, really nasty. Doesn't hurt anything. Instead of getting rid of the mulch and worrying about it, I would just sort of loosen the mulch up, put some fresh stuff on top, and if it puts up a stinkhorn, celebrate as one of those little bizarre things that whoever created all these things here decided that was a the smell of it was a good joke on us. Anyway, she also wrote that she enjoys our podcast. She likes the way we think. Let's make things easy and don't get all tied up. And I want to thank you, Jane from Georgia. I also want to throw this one out. This is one that from Eamon, I think it's Beauty, B-U-T-I, Eamon Beauty. He planted a mallow in his garden. And this is another weird plant I really want to share with you. This is weird stuff out there, folks. He planted a mallow in his garden, and it's doing really well until it got this kind of hair-like thing climbing up and covering orange strands of really thin, like vermicelli, spread all over it. He said he pulled off as much as he could, but it started spreading around. Can I tell him what it is? This is actually a parasite. It's a plant parasite. You know, we think of mistletoe as being a parasite that lives in plants. This stuff, it looks like orange vermicelli, and it grows roots into the twigs of certain kinds of plants, and that's where it gets its nutrients. But it looks just like orange spaghetti. It's called dodder, D-O-D-D-E-R. I think it's kind of cool. He said it's too much. He doesn't really want it. But I'm thinking, let's celebrate some of these weird things as much as you can. Between the stinkhorn mushroom and the parasitic dodder, we got some weird stuff out there. Ought to be a song about them. Hey, let's go up to Greenwood, to the Delta. Bill, you're in Greenwood. That's where the headquarters of the Garden Club of Mississippi is. What can I help you with?
Yes, that's right, Phil. Hey, are you going to play that weird Halloween song you played last year?
Well, which one was that? I don't remember. I might.
Okay, I got a question about a plant around my mailbox. I found it a long time ago out in the country. It was a sunflower, I believe, blooming in the fall, growing about like 8 to 10 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been around my mailbox for years, but you see, I also had a leak in the city. Been fixed the leak for a year. They just did fix it, but anyway... it sort of came out in the spring a little bit, but, you know, it died because of all that water around it.
Yeah.
And there's no trace of it now. I'm just worried, you know, it may be dead from all that moisture. Could that be?
Well, it could be. Does this have, like, little skinny leaves, long skinny leaves, like your little finger?
Yeah, it was just a beautiful little plant. It would bloom all fall just about weeks.
I actually brought one of those in. I'm showing it to Java right now. That's called narrow leaf sunflower. It's a perennial. It's one of the best garden plants for fall, but it does get big. But get this, Bill, it actually is also called swamp sunflower because it can live in low wet areas. A lot of time you see it along the edges of wet ditches and stuff like that. So it might have been yours got overwhelmed by too much water all at once. But if you know where it is, you know, if you could poke around, the plant should still be there and it may come back. I just don't know. It might have been overwhelmed by too much water all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But
I've been poking around and I have not been able to find it. And I haven't been able to find any ironweed around here.
Yeah.
Because all the pesticides and people moving in, building houses, I'm finding very few wildflowers here in the Delta.
Well, because Delta's agriculture, you know, and you know they, you know, if there was corn growing out there, they would till it under and grow cotton or soybeans. You know, that's just the way agriculture is. But if you get back on some of these back roads, you know, go up Highway 8, you know, look over along the edges of the hedgerows and stuff, you can see these things there. Matter of fact, you can, if you find this narrow-leaf sunflower, which is blooming now, if you'll cut it back and move the roots to your place, you know, just the base of the plant, it'll come up just fine next year. So you can get a new start. But if you got to dig some, go ahead and cut it back, or else it's going to wilt, suck itself dry before you can plant it. But you can get another start. And it'll be in some ditches out there if you get on out from town a little bit.
Yeah, I was along Highway 3 from Vicksburg.
Yeah.
And there's some beautiful wildflowers growing out there in the country, middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, look for some hedgerows. It'll be out there.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Phil.
All right. Appreciate it. Appreciate that. I was talking about the Garden Clubs of Mississippi being in Greenwood. That's where the headquarters is. I was at Mississippi State this past week at their landscape seminar, sponsored by the School of Landscape Architecture and also the Garden Clubs of Mississippi. And I was talking to the president of the Garden Clubs of Mississippi, Linda Dickerson. She's from Greenville. Anyway, she said something in her introduction that really memorable the other day. We were talking about the benefits of gardening, and she was talking about, on top of everything else, it's a spirit thing as well. She said, and this is the great quote, she said, "I won't let 9 tomato plants that produced nothing this year keep me from planting 9 more next year." And I appreciate that a whole bunch. Anyway, let's go down to the Gulf Coast to talk to, is it Al Lane in Biloxi?
Elaine, yes,
Elaine,
sir.
Okay, howdy, what's up?
Hey, Felder. Okay, so I have a pretty large oak tree in my front yard, about 10 feet around.
Uh-huh.
And I've got, and I hope you can hear me because my connection, okay, good. All right. I've got lots of erosion probably 20 feet out from the base of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, can I bring in some dirt, because I've got some exposed roots now. Can I bring in some dirt? And, you know, like water it heavily, irrigate it, whatever, so that I can grow grass there.
Yeah. I'm going to cut to the chase on this because this is something I've dealt with for just about 40 years. What I was taught in a turf management class decades now as observation, even though you'll see grass growing under oak trees on the Gulf Coast,
right,
if you mow high and take care of it, if you keep it alive, it'll grow for years and years and years. But here's the deal. Once it dies, for whatever reason, it's gone for good. I have yet to see a single success story in 40 years of people getting grass reestablished in heavy shade. So what I would do, first of all, you said erosion. There's no hill. How do you have erosion in a flat part of the country? I mean, are you on the hillside, or is it just the bare root showing?
No, it's just eroded. I mean, I've got like a ring of jasmine around it that's kept the soil there. But anything beyond there, just because the grass died, every time it rains, it runs off because I got a little teeny bit of slope in the yard.
Yeah.
So it just wears out. And so I there's nothing left there. There's no good topsoil.
Okay. Well, it won't hurt the tree to have roots on top of the ground. That's real natural. And a lot of places, including botanic gardens, actually celebrate that by making a distinct line where the grass is and where it isn't, and let the roots be an attractive feature of the tree. So right off the bat, it doesn't hurt the tree. So, but as far as the erosion, your best bet would be to put some shredded bark, because shredded bark doesn't float away like chip bark does, and then eventually get you some Asiatic jasmine or ivy, monkey grass, one of those kind of ground covers for the shade. Probably the easiest would be monkey grass, whether it's that little small stuff they call mondo grass or the bigger stuff they call liriope or liriope. Either one of those, if you'll put them in little rows on, you know, across where the wash is, get them established, then leaves will start catching up on those, and you'll actually grow some pretty good dirt around those. So I would use a ground cover where the water washes, and up around the trees, there's just simply nothing that's going to grow other than Asiatic jasmine, English ivy, monkey grass, that kind of stuff. But no, I wouldn't even think about bringing dirt in and planting grass under there. Just a waste of time.
Okay. Good to know.
Okay, good luck. And if you have some more questions about it, shoot me an email because we can get, I mean, there's a lot of really cool landscapes down there with no grass or another oak tree. Some really cool, you know, take a drive around town. Go over to what's the place right across the bridge? I'm drawing a blank.
Ocean Springs?
Hey, Ocean Springs. Yeah. Right around, look at some of those gardens. You'll see some really terrific ideas there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Good luck, okie doke.
You too. Love your show.
Thanks. I hope I don't come across a negative. And Java and I talked last week. I wouldn't mind coming up with a program next week just on grumpy gardening, just grumpy stuff, grouchy grumpy stuff. Stay down on the coast of Diamond Head. Hey, Paul, you calling about your fig tree?
Yeah, I want to plant some. First of all, we love figs, and second of all, the deer don't seem to eat them,
yeah, which not is yet.
A real problem.
Yeah.
Real problem down here. But just what are some good varieties, both for eating and canning and just general figs do's and don'ts?
There's some really good varieties of figs. Matter of fact, there's a fella in central Mississippi who has like 20 different kinds of figs. I would start with one called Celeste. Start with a C, Celeste, like celestial. It is your most dependable producer by far. And if I had, you know, if you could plant a whole bunch, I'd plant mostly Celeste because, you know, it just makes it easy. Brown turkey is a popular variety, but it's kind of iffy. Sometimes they lose that first crop. Sometimes, you know, it's a popular one and it's a good tasting, but it's not as dependable as Celeste. And then they've got some, there's an LSU purple. That's a really funny looking. It's good for eating. Doesn't make the best preserves. They just for some reason, they just don't put up as well. But those are three really good ones. And then there's one, if you got anybody going up to Jackson on a weekend, the farmer's market down by the fairground, there's a guy named Don Kazari who sells his dad's old, what we call it, Kazari fig. They're as big as eggs. They're golden yellow. That little hole in the bottom is plugged up with what tastes like a drop of pure honey. But that's called Kazari fig, but only if somebody's going to be in the Jackson area. And that's one I grow in my yard.
Okay.
Let me throw any
tips about growing them?
Yes, they like a wide hole. Each one you need to go ahead and clear an area that's maybe 4 feet across. Work up the dirt pretty good. Don't add a whole bunch of stuff, and cover that with mulch. You know, in other words, don't have grass growing up to them. And then when you take the plants out of the pot, loosen up their potting soil, spread the roots out, and plant them just a little on the high side. So if they settle a little bit, they're not planted too deep and stay wet in the winter. And the other thing is the day you put it in the ground, and this is crazy and people don't like to hear it, but this is what people who grow figs for a living do. This is what I do. The day you put it in the ground, cut it back to knee high, no matter how big it is, and it'll branch out the next year, and those branches will be the main trunks for the rest of the tree's life. And once you do that, every year, sometime in the wintertime, whatever grew the year before, I'll give you an example. Mine has got all this stuff that grew this year, 2018. Follow it from the tip end to where it started back in the spring and cut about half of that off. That way, every year the branches will get bushier and bushier. You'll have a fig bush that you can actually pick instead of a fig tree that you can't reach the top. So cut it back when you plant it. And then every year in the winter, whatever grew the year before, cut it back about halfway. And you'll have pretty little bushes.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. Really enjoy your program.
More than you ever wanted to know, Paul, about figs. But shoot me an email if you got some more questions about it. Appreciate it.
Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.
You know, when I go to places like California, I'm lecturing in New England or up in the Midwest or anywhere outside the South. I always take some homemade fig preserves, not I take these little small half pint jars because, you know, you can buy Vermont maple syrup, you can buy cherries, you can buy stuff anywhere on earth, but you got to know somebody to get homemade fig preserves. And that's one thing we Southerners got over everybody else. Now let's go staying on the coast. Let's talk with Craig down in Biloxi. Hey, Craig, good morning.
Good morning.
What's up?
My question is about nitrogen in the soil. There's a lot of, nitrogen in the air.
Yep.
If you aerate the ground, will the ground trap it?
Nah, not really, because the stuff that's in the air is, you know, it's in a gas form. But there are some plants that will trap it. You know about clover. Clover,
yeah.
The roots of clover have these little nodules on there that actually take the nitrogen from the air and convert it into little clover lumps. I'm going to call them little lumps. And then as they decompose, it's in a form of nitrogen that plants can use. But it's a good question, but you have to have some way to trap it and convert it from oxygen nitrogen to dirt nitrogen.
I have one more question about persimmons. Can I take a persimmon fruit and plant it, and will it turn into a tree?
Well, yes, you can. Matter of fact, I've got a persimmon right here, and it feels soft. It's really orange. It's soft. I bit into it, and it just turned my mouth inside out. It's not ripe yet. Here's the deal, though. Persimmons and plums and dogwoods and magnolias, those with fleshy fruit, those seeds won't sprout unless they get completely clean from the flesh. There's an ingredient in the flesh of the fruit that inhibits seeds from germinating. It's the way nature does it. It gets a possum to eat it. Possum completely cleans it in the digestive tract, and it leaves the seed completely clean. Well, it's got possum fertilizer with it. But anyway, if you want to do this, take them out of the persimmon or the dogwood or the magnolia, clean the seeds completely, get all the flesh off of them, and then either then plant them outside. The second thing they need to be exposed to a certain amount of cold, chilling temperature. That's how they tell when it's springtime. So put them in a plastic bag in the refrigerator and keep them over the winter. Plant them next spring, and they'll come right back up.
Okay, you know, like scrub the seeds with a toothbrush or something?
Yeah, don't booger them up. Just get all the flesh, under running water. But clean them really, really good. And again, put them in a plastic bag with a damp, barely damp piece of paper and put it in the refrigerator, not the freezer. This makes them think they've been cleaned. It makes them think they've laid out during a cool, moist winter, and then they'll sprout right up.
And then full sun and about an inch deep?
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's all the good news. The bad news is, and I got to share this, wild persimmons are either male or female. You got to have a male and a female fig to get figs. And when you plant them from seed, you can't tell them apart until they get it old enough to start bearing fruit. And that might be 5, 6, 7 years. So it's going to be a gamble. You got to plant a whole bunch and hope you got at least one female and at least one male in that batch.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck on it.
All right.
I've talked so much science today. My head is starting to explode about this science stuff. If you like persimmons, consider planting one of the Japanese persimmons. They're beautiful ornamental plants. The fruits are the size of your fist. They're self-pollinating. The one called Fuyu or Fuyugaki, self-pollinating, and they're sweet, sweet, sweet right off the plant. That's the way to go, and they're pretty too. Let's go to Gulfport. Shelley, what's up? Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Howdy.
I'm trying to see what I need to do to control buttonweed.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a tough one. Virginia buttonweed, it's got a slick leaf, and so weed killers tend to beat up and roll off. And if you put more weed killer or put it on stronger, that'll kill your grass if you got St. Augustine centipede. So we don't have a really good herbicide that'll kill it without killing your grass. What I would do, and this sounds kind of weird, but this is absolutely true, raise your mower to the highest setting, throw the wrench away, always mow high, fertilize lightly, no earlier than next April. A little bit of good fertilizer, like centipede food on centipede or St. Augustine in April, and mow high and give it a good deep soaking, I'm going to say at least every 3 or 4 weeks, but not more than once a week. This will get your grass thick. It'll get it healthy. The buttonweed will have to grow up on top of it, and your lawnmower will snatch it out.
Okay, so don't do anything to say like winterizing.
No. Winterizer is to get grass ready for winter. We recommend no fertilizer past the first September. If you put centipede food down on St. Augustine or centipede in April, you've winterized for that next winter because that winterizer ingredient, potash, lasts for a couple of years, okay, even in the sandy soils of the Gulf Coast. So fertilize sometime in April, mow high, and your grass will choke a lot of the buttonweed out. And the rest of it gets snatched up by the mower.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Okay. I think we got time for one more call. Rhonda is on the road. Hey, Rhonda, good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am moving back to Mississippi after a few decades of living away, buying a house in Hattiesburg, actually on my way to find the closing today.
Okay. Well, we're at the end of the program, so let's cut to the chase. What can I help you with right now?
I want to make like a living roof. I want to build a patio, a screen porch patio, and I want the roof to be a green or a living roof. And I can't find anybody.
I'm the guy. I'm the guy, Rhonda. I'm the guy to talk to. I do this myself.
Really?
Yeah. I had a green roof arbor for years and years and years that was big enough to park my pickup truck on. And I found out, you know, when you read the stuff, they always talk about all these sedums and stuff like that. You don't find stuff written by people from the South, what will grow in the South.
Yes.
But they do it at Disney. I've seen it on doghouses. I've got a green roof arbor thing that I built just to put my trash cans under. Okay, so I can tell you what'll grow, but we don't have time today, but I'm the guy.
I'll email you then.
Do that, Ron. Hey, in Hattiesburg, cool little town you're moving back to. Is it an old home place, or that's just where you wanted to be?
Well, I went to Southern. My parents live in Prentice. My dad's really sick, so I wanted to be there because that's where they go to the hospital and that kind of stuff.
Well, there's some cool stuff in Hattiesburg, some cool people, and if you'll shoot me an email, we'll get you started. The green roof thing, there are some things that will surprise you that won't work, some things that will surprise you that you wouldn't have thought about that I worked out with working with other people. Anyway, appreciate it so much. Folks, this is the Gestalt Gardener, a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. It's been some science today, and I've been wagging my finger in people's face. I've been talking about the school colors in fruits and vegetables and flowers of Alcorn and Mississippi State. So if you got some stuff you want to talk about, shoot me an email, garden@mpbonline.org. Kevin Farrell's been the phone greeter today. The awesome, awesome Java Chapman's in there laughing about the music we chose. We're going to take a break. It's called a week. We'll be back after that, talk with you more about gardening. Meanwhile, take a kid to a farmer's market or a garden center. Show them how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty.